Thanks, everyone. Welcome to the session, Taking the Stress Out of Solo Travel. We're hoping to get started as soon as we can, so if you're in this room, we're very pleased to have you. So today, this is a bit of a fun session because we're going to be talking about travel and the reasons why people travel and the way that we as blind people travel successfully and in a way that minimises the stress of that experience when we're travelling on our own. And travel, of course, can be anywhere from within Australia or outside Australia to different countries for different reasons. You know, we travel for connection with family, with people, to learn and to grow, to broaden our horizons and to exchange with new cultures and gain insights that way. So around the table we have three very distinguished travellers who are going to present for us for a few minutes each, and then hopefully there'll be lots of time for discussions and questions and exchanges of ideas, because I'm thinking that in the room there are probably lots of other travellers. Or people who are interested in travelling for whatever reason, and we can all exchange some tips and hacks as we did last time. So just a reminder that when we get to the questions and answers, we're going to have a microphone coming around. If you could indicate to Naomi, I think you'll be doing that. Yeah, you'll be here. Lovely. That you would like to speak, a microphone will come to you, and if you could introduce yourself by name so that we know who is speaking. And are we recording or streaming this? We're recording. Okay, so we need to speak nice and clear for the recording, and if we can keep other voices, such as voiceover and Jaws and other characters of that nature, to a minimum, that means that they won't be heard in the recording. Okay, so our first speaker is well known to all of us. Ricky Chaplin is the Advocacy Officer of Blind Citizens Australia, and as well as and President of Deaf Blind Australia, I believe. And as well as that, Ricky has been travelling for a few years for business and for pleasure. And while he doesn't regard himself as an adventurous traveller, Ricky has acquired a level of competence where he feels confident in being able to do what he wants to do within his travel experiences. And the rationale for Ricky coming to join us today is to share some of those ideas so that we too can be reassured that we can be competent in the travel that we want to complete. So, Ricky, can I hand over for you? And I will be timing.
Okay, thanks, Helen. I wrote an article about an experience that I had travelling back from the United States in September last year, and hence I was asked to present at this session today. Let me focus on the experience that had happened. So my flight from Lafayette, Louisiana, was significantly delayed, and I arrived at Dallas, and despite assurances that I would make my flight to Sydney, I didn't. So I was on my own, and I'm thinking, wow, okay, I've never been in this situation before. I never dreamed I would be. So eventually I was taken to the Qantas desk, and they booked me into a hotel overnight, and I eventually made it to the hotel. I was put in a transport bus sort of thing, and it arrived. I was met out the front of the hotel and checked in and escorted to my room. And at that point, that's really when the advocacy started. And when I mean advocacy, I don't mean it in the sense that I was being discriminated against or anything like that, but there were certain things that I needed. So for one thing, I wasn't, familiar with the room, not the room, the hotel at all. So I had to think about how was I going to do things like get meals for myself? How was I going to contact reception? All of those things that you need to break down, and, those practical everyday tasks that you've got to deal with. So I had a chat with the person who brought me to the room and a manager. My flight to Sydney wasn't leaving until late the next day, so I arranged a late checkout, and I arranged for someone to take me down to the restaurant for dinner that night. The next morning, I managed to get room service, which was a little anxiety-provoking for me because of my hearing loss, which I've spoken a great deal about over the years. I was worried that the phones may not work in the hotel room with my telecalls on the hearing aids. Thankfully, they did, and I was able to call through, get a description of what was on the menu and order something. Then I had packed all of my leads into my suitcase, so I didn't have any charges for anything. So I managed to get an iPhone charger, thankfully, and then I had to start thinking through, well, what are the resources that I've got at hand to deal with this situation? I had two laptops that thankfully had full batteries. I had a Braille note. I had an iPhone. I had Aira on the iPhone. Aira, sorry. I'm always mispronouncing that. Yeah. And I had the room phone. So with those resources in hand, I had to remind myself that I wasn't alone in this, that there were people that I could contact. And it was hard to fight the feeling that here I was on the fifth floor of this hotel room in a town that I'd never been in before, in a country that, you know, as much as I had been there many times, it was a long way from home. I felt like I could die in here and no one might know. But, you know, I got through it. And I think that's the point, is that when something happens and you're in a situation you never could have imagined yourself to be in, you do have the ability to think through the things that you need to deal with. Even if you have to do that minute to minute, you will get through it because you have to. And I guess that's why I wanted to come here today, not because I'm an adventurous traveller and, you know, I travel all over the world and do things that, you know, other people are far more, or appear to be, are far more confident about doing. It is that I tend to travel for a purpose. If there's something that I need to do or want to do, then travel's a part of that, and I accept that as part of the deal. I focus on the end goal, on the destination, and on the task that I really want to achieve. And I think I handle that the same way. Even when I lived in Melbourne and I was getting to strange buildings that I didn't know, I don't have the greatest mobility skills in the world. Spatial skills is, you know, they're always something that I've struggled with. And yet I did those things. There wasn't one meeting that I didn't make, and it was because we've got brains. We've got the ability to think through, to process, and we need to have confidence in our ability to do that as opposed to going through the actual orientation and mobility or concentrating on the steps that we've never done before. And I think part of that is acknowledging the fact that it's okay to be anxious. For many of us, anxiety is something that we can't avoid. It's just there. It happens. But we're not going to be able to deal with that anxiety effectively if we don't acknowledge it. And I think that was the thing that I really focused on most during this experience in Dallas last year was, okay, I've got anxiety. Don't let the anxiety overtake my ability to rationalise and to think. Acknowledge that it's there and put it in its place. It doesn't have to be your enemy. It can be something that heightens, in fact, your sense of awareness. But not to a point where you're so overwhelmed that you can't think, that you can't process. And if we don't acknowledge that, I think that's the risk that we run, is that we can allow the anxiety to prevent us from doing things that we would really like to do but just aren't going to do. And look, I don't always take my own advice as seriously as I should. There are instances where I probably could do things or I don't do because of the anxiety. But I find for me that if I have to do something because someone's asked me to be somewhere, then I can't let that person down. And so travel's a part of that, and that's why I continue to do it when I need to do it, because if we are to engage with people in the world and to play a role in contributing to the world, then we need to go about these things. And I suppose that's how I handle it from a fairly pragmatic point of view. I wish that I had, you know, the sense of adventure to just go out there and test my limits. I've always really admired people who do that. But even if you're not that way inclined, achieving things that you might never thought possible can still happen. So I think that's the message that I want to leave you with today. So thanks for that.
Thank you, Ricky. That's a really, I think, useful message to start us off with. And I guess the whole purpose of this session really is to start to feel comfortable within ourselves with the level of challenge that we want to have in our lives involving travel. Our next speaker is Jackie Armstrong, who is the National Policy Advisor for Guide Dogs Australia, where she leads strategy and engagement with the National Disability Insurance Agency and other departments. Jackie also advises on state-specific matters, projects, and has a strong policy analysis and disability advocacy background. And Jackie, prior to being at Guide Dogs, has held electorate advisory roles with New South Wales and Federal Members of Parliament, and worked at KPMG in Sydney, as well as regularly contributing to other policy areas and volunteering on committees. And it's very likely, Jackie, that these opportunities have led to travel. So we're very much looking forward to hearing from you, and thank you for being part of this workshop.
Thank you, Helen. I hope I've got this close enough. Yes, you're correct. My professional life has led me, as Ricky said, as a motivator to get out and explore the world. But also personally, I'm very fortunate, I would say, that I have family who have chosen to live in all corners of the world. So that is another motivator to get out there and visit them. So whilst I do love travel, I also have a trigger, I suppose, to get out and try and find solutions and make it work. In many instances, I am travelling alone, and particularly as someone with a significant vision impairment, and I suppose to a degree a woman travelling alone, there are important steps that I take to make sure that I have, as much as possible, a degree of confidence of where I'm going and what I'm doing. And some people might call it slightly obsessive, but I call it very prepared. I'm all about planning. And that's where all the technology comes into place. Even when I'm planning my journey as far as what time my flights might arrive, trying to get direct flights instead of transiting through airports, so it removes a little bit of that stress. I sort of, again, it may not be possible for everyone, but I save up a little bit longer, I suppose, particularly for personal trips, so I can pay an annual subscription for lounge access, so I can get someone to take me to a somewhat familiar environment where I know I can get some assistance. I also ask for meet and assist at airports, because they are often very overwhelming and very busy environments where there's often time pressures associated, and that removes a lot of that stress. In preparing, I probably take it to a significant degree, as I think most of us do in most of our life decisions. I will research where I'm going. I'll download maps and say and tag areas that I know I'm going to. I'll save those so that I can access those if I don't have connectivity. Also, I mean, my domestically, particularly, my attitude is with my guide dog and my iPhone, I can pretty much go anywhere. And then add to that a patience and a most of the time a genuinely friendly attitude and not a hesitance to ask for help. I tend to get around quite confidently without too much drama. It is, again, about planning where you're going, particularly when travelling with a guide dog. I book my hotels based on where the closest dog toileting area is. So what other travellers may not take into consideration is certainly sort of primary for me. I also never go anywhere without my various apps attached to my phone, such as TapTapSee, domestically TripView, MoveIt, Apple Maps, and Google Maps, fantastic. I do tend to, and again, I suppose I'm not the most adventurous traveller and also location of family and friends. Most of them are in English-speaking countries, so I think that does make things a little bit easier. Internationally, I don't take my guide dog. It's a personal choice, but I also think she deserves a little bit of a holiday on occasion, and she's usually quite happy to embrace that. And quite a blow to my ego, I suppose. She's usually not thrilled when I come back. She's like, oh, great, work time again. It's like all of us getting back from holiday. It's back to reality. But with that comes a very different set of challenges for me in my travel, because it is easy to become very reliant on my guide dog to problem solve and find a way around. So when I am travelling internationally, it's primarily my cane and, again, my apps. And more recently, I've also become an IRA convert, and I'm actually travelling to Hong Kong in 2 weeks. And that will be a bit of a challenge, I suspect. But, again, knowing I have tech and the IRA backup is a great deal of confidence for me. It is all about planning there and acknowledging that there will be stressful times. It's the nature of travel, whether you have a vision impairment or not. Travel can be stressful. It's about being adaptable. It's about trying to... I'm not that spontaneous. I plan my days, be it in Sydney, in my day-to-day work, or whether I'm travelling. I know I like to have a plan and I like to know where I'm going. In using maps and always knowing I have that sort of there to tell me where I am and where I'm going, if I'm in unfamiliar environments, I also download the map steps and I save those to say my notes app or whatever it is. So if I am lost, I have a general understanding of where I am and where I'm needing to go. I also like to have a general understanding of where I'm headed to, because when I'm travelling alone, and particularly as a woman, I don't want to appear unconfident and that I don't know where I'm going. So I prefer, if I approach someone to ask for some information, I like to be specific as far as the information I'm looking for. Whether it's accurate or not, I feel it, you know, potentially makes me look a little bit more like I know where I'm going and less likely to be given incorrect information purposefully. I suppose, what else have I got here? Apps and also features. One travel tip I suppose I learned many years ago was to travel with a power board. Now, it's one of those strange things, but with all of our devices, that I only need to find one PowerPoint in a room and I can plug in all my devices, and I found that very handy. Also, as far as taking the stress out of travel, I try wherever possible to travel carry-on only. It's challenged my packing skills, but as we all know, trying to locate or trying to describe what your bag looks like to someone else in an airport is usually, for me, one of the most stressful parts of travel. So if I know I have my possessions with me, that also gives me a great deal of confidence. I suppose another thing I do when I'm travelling, it depends where I'm going, but what I've done in the last few years as a solo traveller, I've joined some of these smaller travel groups and travel tours, and usually sort of about 10 to 12 people in a group. And I found that to be really, really good as well. At first I was a little bit hesitant. What would they think of a single person with a vision impairment joining their group? But I have not had a negative experience at all, which has been fantastic. When I've travelled to a new city and I want to get my bearings, another really useful thing I tend to do on the first day or two is find one of those sort of red bus or big city bus tours that'll take you around the city. Whilst I may not always see the landmarks that they're talking about, I get the general bearing of the city, and they're often very, very useful sort of historical and location information. And if nothing else, it's just an interesting way to spend a few hours and you get to sort of know the top sights of the city. So that's something I always try and do. I also know we're running out of time here, so really I'd keep it to sort of a couple of top tips. Do your research before you go. Be aware of where you're travelling and what the environment may be like. Think about your own circumstances and your own level of confidence. But more than anything else, take your tech, download your important things beforehand so you know that you've got that information even if you don't have connectivity. Know where you're going as much as possible, even if you're not confident. Try to appear confident, because then others are more likely to approach you and be helpful. Try and keep a happy attitude. Easier said than done when you're sleep deprived. And also, make sure you know the location of your local consulate or embassy. Have their contact details and know where they are, because if you're ever stuck, they're a very good source of information and help. But other than that, get out there and explore the world. It's pretty exciting, and there are more opportunities than ever, and there's more ways of doing it now that we have all this tech available to us in the planning stages, while we're out and about and connecting with others when we travel.
Thank you, Jackie, for all these really excellent ideas and tips, and hopefully as the discussion evolves there'll be a lot more shared around the room. So our last formal speaker is Judy Small, who has travelled all the way from New Zealand just to be here at the convention today. Judy is the convener of the World Blind Union Asia Pacific Women's Network. So that involves a lot of travel in itself. But for years now, Judy has had the proverbial travel bug. As a young adult, she travelled several times to the UK and Europe with her family when they were young. And since then, she's wanted to do more travel and be more confident about it, particularly travelling alone. So after a trip to Melbourne and Perth in 2017, she travelled to Hawaii for a week with her partner and her daughter. September was a penultimate trip for Judy, because she went from New Zealand to Mongolia on her own and had 2 days in Hong Kong on the way as a tourist. And this was to attend a World Blind Union event, but there were many opportunities to enjoy the experiences that travel had to offer. So I will invite Judy to share more of that. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Helen. I might nearly call myself a bit of a gypsy, because I do like to travel, but I do enjoy doing local travel as well. So with my various advocacy roles over the years, I have done a lot of internal travel by plane, bus and, not trains, around New Zealand. So that doing that local travel often equips you with the skills and the abilities that you need to do the bigger international trips, which is quite useful, really. So I'm quite a conservative person. I probably agree with Jackie and Ricky and overplan my trips, but it's really important to get down to the last details of everything. So when I was planning our first trip to Melbourne and Perth a couple of years ago, I spent a lot of time with the travel agent. In fact, Stephen, who's also here today, is a totally blind traveller as well, and we both spent a lot of time with the travel agent asking lots of questions and working out where we would stay, looking at what public transport would be like when we got there, because no drivers, public transport in local areas is quite essential to know about. The travel agents didn't know lots about public transport, but looking online, we were able to find out a lot of what we needed to know, and to know that in Western Australia, and especially in and out of Perth, public transport, I don't think they've got guards, but they do have good assistants, meet and assist at the railway stations. And that worked out extremely well for us as we were staying about 60 k's south of Perth. So that was really useful to know before we left, that we weren't going to get stuck in a small city when we wanted to go into Perth to do things, Stephen's got over 50 cousins, so we managed to find at least four of them while we were in Perth to visit, which is a great incentive to make sure that we just don't stay at our accommodation and do local block walks. Now, we did take our maps and our blind square, and it looked like there was a really good shop located about 100 metres away from where we were. Now, we did a whole big block, and it took us probably half an hour to walk around this block, and the place was still 100 metres away from where we were, but in different directions. And I suspect somebody put that point into Blind Square themselves, and it just stayed there, and it was non-existent. Because we did ask in some other shops we found, and they had no idea about the shop that we had seen on our blind square. So just be wary that people sometimes can put in their own points, and they don't exist. When we went to Hawaii, we took my oldest daughter with us as well, and she has an intellectual impairment as well as a vision impairment, but looks quite able, and people would say, oh, see that sign over there? Just go over there, then turn right and go 100 metres along the road and follow the next sign. And I don't know how often we had to say on her behalf, she can't read the signs. So that was a bit of a dilemma for the three of us on that trip. But she was quite good at negotiating the traffic because it was on the opposite side of the road from what we were used to. And it made crossings at intersections that didn't have any audible sounds on them quite tricky. And the biggest trip I did on my own was to go to Mongolia. Now that was many trips to the travel agent, many discussions about what I might do on the way. I wasn't going to go all that way without doing something on the way to make the trip more valuable to me personally. So I'm very keen to go and lead the convention for the women and the women's network for our region assembly in the Southeast Asia Pacific area. But I just needed to make sure that I really got the best value out of the money and do something that was of interest on the way. So after looking around with the travel agent and working about looking at doing train trips from Beijing to St. Petersburg and all sorts of ambitious things like that, it's still on my bucket list. But the most practical thing to do was to go to Hong Kong and stop over there because that's where my flight was stopping and have a couple of days in Hong Kong. And like Ricky, you do save up a little bit extra so that you can purchase those, either the lounges or purchase a tour for those few days that you've got, that you'll be on your own, but you want to get the best value of the time you're in a city. I didn't find a small group to do a couple of days tour with, but what I did find was a tour company that has guides. And for a fee, they were quite prepared to combine their walking tour, their fooding tour, and their shopping tour, and provide me with my own guide for 2 days. I'm not a huge walker, so walking 15 kilometres in 2 days was quite a feat for me. But I was none the worse for my efforts. We went on public transport. We went on the metro, and that's the only privately run public transport system in the world that runs at a profit. And it was terribly clean, and I sort of felt really safe, but I don't know whether that was because I was with someone all the time. And I didn't have to do any thinking about how I was going to get somewhere, where I was going to go, what were the shops that I wanted to see, and or what was the attraction I needed to visit that made sure I did go to the right places. So we went through the markets. We went to a fish market that I wouldn't recommend eating fish after smelling it. We went to a wonderful jade market. Most of it probably was out of my price range, but I did find some little trinkets to bring back and memorabilia, because that's what I like to do on my travels. And we went up Mount Victoria. And then she seemed to be quite good at thinking that this shop might be quite interesting where I could buy grandchildren presents from. So they all got Rock Shop T-shirts and things like that. And just having that person was quite useful to me in my travel and made it a lot more relaxing. Now, haven't you mentioned much about phones, apps and using them when I'm out, or IRA? I've not yet used IRA, but I'm going to be going to do so. I know that, and I am subscribed to using IRA. And Stephen has used IRA since we've been here on several occasions and found it really useful. But I don't hear my phone very well when I'm out, and there's a lot of noise in the background, so I tend not to use it much or think I will rely on it for while I am out. So I do a lot of planning before I go and gather as much information as I can. And like Jackie, I do keep it downloaded on my phone. So if I don't have mobile access, I do have access to something. So in the airports, I think the most anxious thing you do is often once you've checked in, before they take you to security, they say, sit down here on these chairs and we'll be back in an hour. I hope you are. And I get concerned when you're not. So at Melbourne the other day, the 3:25 deadline had gone. No sign of anybody, despite their assurances. And we actually heard the chap asking his colleagues to come and collect us from the cafe where we were. So we got up and started wandering around, and a Qantas official did actually make contact with the right people. And they did arrive at 25 to 4, and our flight was leaving at 5:02. But it was all good because we were in the system by then. So once I know I'm in a system and I'm going to be boarding my flight, or I've got contact with the officials at airports, I feel a lot happier than what I do when I'm sitting on the chairs waiting for somebody to come around and say, yes, where is it? Where are you going to? What are you waiting for? So I think my biggest advice is very similar to Jackie's. Always have that friendly face. Be affable. Even if you're feeling stressed inside, be confident outside and make sure you've got the right questions. So think about what you need to know and what is the most essential thing for you to know now that will make the difference for the next steps in your trips. So yeah, that's my travel stories. And I started as a young adult when I had to travel on buses to get from my house into town or take children to appointments. And I had a guide dog in one hand, a child over the my shoulder in my other arm, and a shopping bag, and perhaps one child on foot. And people remember you, and you actually gain a lot of confidence because we always got to where we were going and people knew us. And they'd say, "Hey, do you want this bus or that bus?" And we got very used to doing that local travel at quite an efficient rate in the end. Thanks.
Thank you, Judy. That was great. I'm glad the Joanna Lumley video I sent you before going to Mongolia was inspiring.
Oh, yes, it was.
Because... Yeah, because some people, like, there was a series at the time that Joanna Lumley, whom you might have heard of, was conducting, and she makes travel sound so easy. But she's not blind, so there we go. All right, so this is the part where we can have a discussion together and open up to questions and comments and ideas that people have found useful in their own travels, or questions that you would like other people to answer. We will keep the questions fairly brief just so that we can get as many around as we can. Would anyone like to start us off?
We have a well-attended room and lots and lots of hands in the air. So the volunteers are counting numbers of hands, and we will get to you as we can.
Yeah.
If someone taps you on the shoulder, it means that we have you in a queue of questions.
Yes.
First question.
Remembering to say your name and on the microphone and speak into the microphone, please.
It's Joanne. Not so much of a question, but more of a comment. I am an epic traveller. I am a self-proclaimed gypsy. And I travel to countries that don't speak English at all. For me, I think what is really important, two points, is that asking for help is a strength, and that's, I really learned that a lot. And also be assertive, but doesn't mean that I need to be rude. And I'm definitely a solo, women solo traveler that just used to be blind. So if you want to know anything, feel free to come and approach me.
Yay. Thanks, Joanne.
Hello, it's Jane here. I also had a very similar remark about travelling to countries where English is not the first language. I travel avidly as well. Disclaimer here that I do have some residual vision. I can see things quite close. But I have found that having the basic conversational skills to be able to ask for directions and to understand those directions is really helpful. I've travelled independently in Italy and Japan, and I found in both places having enough language to be able to ask for that has greatly increased my confidence.
Thank you.
Question at the back.
Sandra speaking. A comment. I think it's really important if you're starting out for the first time, if it's possible, to link in with a vision impaired travel group, because you can learn so much from your blind peers when you're actually travelling with them about what they've done in the past, what's worked for them, and to help you problem solve in situations that may present as stressful to you because you've not experienced them previously. The other thing I would say is that for, I guess, interstate travel and maybe regional travel in Australia, there may be benefit, and I've certainly found it, in having a regular taxi driver in your own city, because they often have contacts in other parts of the country. And there's also an app that I didn't know existed until recently. If you're at an airport or flying and you're catching the cab home or wherever you're going, if you give that person on the forward journey the flight number for your return flight or whatever it is, they can actually track the location of that flight on Google Maps, which means that you're not stressing so much about whether the taxi's going to be there when you're at the airport and they're going to be sitting around and you're going to be charged higher fees because they're hanging around in the airport. They're not. They actually know whether the plane's running late. You keep in contact with them with your mobile. And if you know what car is coming to pick you up, they can give you the details and you can describe to the ground staff at the airport or whatever it is what colour car it is and where they're pulling up at the airport to actually meet you, and they can look out for you. So that takes a lot of stress away at the end of a journey as well.
Our next question is from Vanessa.
Vanessa, you ready?
Hello. I don't think this is working. Can
we get some volume, please, Dale, on the radio mic in the shearer's room?
I will use my teacher voice. I have a comment as opposed to a question. And
Sorry, Vanessa, I might stop you. Because the teacher
I'm just going to swap mics.
Good plan.
But just because for the recording, I don't think even a teacher voice would get through.
No.
Okay. Hello.
There you go.
Here I am. Okay. I just had a quick comment. There are a lot of people who use various apps, and I find that cumbersome because I need two hands with VoiceOver and a dog. So I found a Victor Reader Trek to be really useful because it has physical buttons. You can use it one-handed. And now that mine has a working GPS chip, it's actually really good. So that's all I really wanted to say. Look into the Victor Reader Trek. Ask me if you want to know more about it.
Thank you.
All right, we have a question down the front. Sorry, I'm just moving the second mic down.
Passed on.
Okay, it's Michael Hammond here from Ulverston. Just some practical questions. Firstly, is there an availability for a backup battery pack that suits Apple devices that can take travelling with you rather than having to find it?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, excellent. Secondly, I've tried using earpods and I find them very disconcerting in the fact that because my hearing is very important, are there other ways you can actually have some audio access without using the main speaker from your phone.
Yeah, I'd recommend the Aftershocks bone conduction headphones. Yep. The only thing I found with them is that if you have to make a phone call, the microphones don't appear to be very good.
Yeah.
I've got a... Sorry?
And you could also just use one AirPod. You don't have to buy them.
Yeah, that's true. You can also use one AirPod is a point. The other thing that I've got is a pair of sports Bluetooth headphones. They're made by Sony. They're quite lightweight. They're still over the ear, but the microphones are a lot better in those, and because they're a fairly small ear cup, they don't tend to block out as much noise.
Christopher.
Christopher Sims from Melbourne, Victoria. Just a quick thought. Anybody here like to comment on the logistics as far as, you know, if one's thinking of doing the CSUN conference in the States?
Has anyone been to CSUN in the room?
I went to CSUN.
Yes, Vanessa, up the back. Can we get a mic to Vanessa, please?
I was really lucky. I went on a Rotary-funded thing. But as for getting there, I imagine just, you know, working through with a travel agent, I was probably the wrong person.
Anyone else?
Yes, we do.
Question.
Hi, Paola Avila. Hi, Paola Avila. Sometimes I do have difficulty with anxiety myself. Communicating with blind people who have their hearing, for me as a person losing their vision, but I'm deaf, sometimes I'm experiencing those difficulties. What I find I need to do is communicate tactilely on another person's hand, but a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. So I'm just thinking something maybe that we need to be a bit more aware of looking into the future, how people can be more comfortable, people who are deaf-blind can be more comfortable to communicate with you as blind people, maybe tactilely on your hands, just something to be aware of as we go through the years.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And as president of Deafblind Australia, you know, it's certainly something that we need to work at raising awareness of, is the different methods of communication that people need to be able to use in order to fully engage and not be limited. And I'd also strongly encourage the use of texting. So if you do travel overseas, look at getting a travel SIM, for example, so that you're not worried about data downloads and that kind of thing. So I recently came back from the States and I got myself a local prepaid SIM over there. But you can get travel SIMs before you go and load the appropriate plan onto it so that you're not worried about having to pay a fortune when you come home for any data that you've used. Because, you know, with the advent of these technologies, you're inevitably going to use data and you don't need to be worried about what you're paying for it.
Kirby.
Yeah, guys, to all three of you, I just want to... I don't have anything useful to say other than thank you and how inspiring you all are. But just another thing, well, actually I do have something, well, not useful to say, but interesting. I went to the US with my, my ex, previous gospel choir that I was in. I'm not in it anymore, but I'm still friends with them. They're lovely people. But it was quite interesting because at first... everyone was like, oh, you're blind, you're this and you're that, and no one bothered to actually ask me, oh, well, how independent are you? Can you groom? Can you shower? And so they, you know, they all assumed that, oh, well, you're blind, you know, we're scared to take you. And then, of course, little amused, cynical me, I got there, and all of a sudden their tune changed and they're like, you're so independent and you're so okay on escalators. How do you do this? And I mean, you know, I was very polite to them and I said, look, you know, it's just, I'm kind of used to it. But I had to sort of laugh inwardly because it was quite funny because most of the people in the choir knew that I was blind. It was more the staff that were panicked. Everybody else kind of went, oh, whatever, okay, you need breakfast? Cool. I'll give Barbara a break. You know, oh, yeah, I'll help you. Do you need help carrying your luggage? So most of the people were fine. It was the bureaucratic staff that were quite worried about it. I wasn't worried about it because I had plenty of sighted people to look after me. But that was quite interesting. But I just want to thank you guys for being so inspiring. And you've pretty much almost inspired me to ditch my best friend who will be travelling to New Zealand with me. But I'm seriously thinking of saying to her, you know what? I think I want to go on my own. I don't quite know if I'll have the confidence to do it, but you've inspired the thought. So thank you very much for your inspiring workshop.
Well, thank you, Kirby. And look, I think it is good to be able to think about travelling by yourself because then you're not waiting on someone else's schedule to free up or their finances, whatever the circumstances may be. But you're right, it is about travelling with the right attitude, and you are going to come across absolute tools and jerks, and there are going to be very awkward and somewhat embarrassing situations. And look, I know I have whacked a policeman in Hawaii on the shins once. That didn't go down well with my cane. I've done what we've all done, which is occasionally sort of sat in someone's lap and in an airport lounge in different areas. So I know, I think sometimes I've been a bit unsteady and on my feet, maybe at 8 a.m. and people think I've had a really big night the night before. It's about being open, it's about communicating, and it's about recognising that 99% of the people you come across will want to be helpful. They just may not know the right way to do that, and that's about communicating.
Do we have time for one or two more?
There's Jen Nichols here, just been handed a microphone.
Go, Jen.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, I have just another angle. There might be... I'm quite certain there's people in the room who may or may not disagree, but one thing that I have, travelling on my own, there's another whole aspect which Ricky touched on was the hotels. I've recently... dog guide handlers list saw it. Just returned from Adelaide where I stayed at the Stanford Grand, and there are things now I have a list in my head. I pay the bit extra so I know there's 24-hour concierge, I guess. And then we walk up to the room and I show the dog, this is mummy's bed, find mummy's bed. Well, not now. And then we have things like, okay, can you show me how to use the air conditioner? It was a touchscreen. How do I use the television? Oh, okay, there's a menu, and then you need to go to the second menu and the third menu. Every elevator, the buttons are in a different place. Is the shampoo and the conditioner on the left or the right? I think, but usually I take my own because I don't like that. But there are also things that I... And then I'll get the concierge, once we've dropped my luggage and checked out the room, to walk down to the dog toileting area. It might be just a tree outside the Hyatt in Sydney. There's one tree outside the Irish pub. But it's great because she'll go straight away because I think half the people in the pub go there. And then I'll walk, say, look, can you just walk back with me now? And I'll say, good girl, where's mummy's bed? Find mummy's bed. And Amber was brilliant. And even just this weekend, Jetta has done the same. She found the bedroom first time. So that in Adelaide we had a bit of trouble. I had to hide liver treats under the door and she still didn't find it. But there's just those little things that, you know, concierges are great help. Even at 5 o'clock in the morning when you really can't be bothered putting your clothes back on, they'll run the dog down for you and bring them back up because I've had to use that a few times, but yeah.
Great, thank you.
And just finally, before you wrap up, Helen, we've just had a text come through from David.
Yes.
It says, I think it's also important when talking about IRA to mention the Be My Eyes services. Some people may not be able to afford the IRA service.
Yes.
And that's through the text by David.
And that's a really good suggestion because Be My Eyes, of course, works across the world with volunteers based in every country in the world. So that's a really great resource that hasn't been mentioned yet. So thank you to David for mentioning it now.
Okay, I'm sorry, Helen, one final comment. Sorry, it's Katrina Taylor, so you can deal with me later.
Yep.
I finally got the mic. Well, Helen and I are friends, settle down. Katrina Taylor, Western Victoria, two travel tips. Firstly, something I found out at Tullamarine Airport in Melbourne last year, because I usually catch a shuttle bus because I come from outside of Melbourne, there is an airport chaplain based at Tullamarine who you can make contact with, who can walk over, meet you, say, at the shuttle bus, walk you across to your terminal, hand you over to the staff at the terminal and go from there. If you require a wheelchair assistance, really? They can bring a wheelchair. If you don't, but you do have to book ahead. If anyone wants their phone number, come find me later. If you want volunteers to help you, I'm the girl in the bright green top.
Okay.
And so that's one tip, and that's I've used it twice now. You've got to book ahead, but I tell you what, they are brilliant. Secondly, in terms of packing, my husband and I, we use what's called pack cells. A lot of the outdoor stores, IKEA, and even Kmart sell them now. So it's mesh on one side, nylon on the other. We have different colours, so you can put, like, you know, socks in that in one because they're different sizes, you know, the trousers and that in another. So you're not reefing through your suitcase going, oh, where on earth did I put that pair of shorts? You can find the pack cell. We have different colours, so I just pull out the ones that are mine. You can add tactile things to them as well. The other packing thing is if I'm flying, I have a smaller bag inside my carry-on luggage, which will have, like, my drops bag. I'll stick my iPhone in there with my earplugs, reading glasses, whatever else, so I can stick my carry-on bag in the overhead locker or wherever, pull out the small bag, and then I've just got what I need for the flight, which I can shove in the seat pocket. Yeah. In front of me.
Excellent, thank you. There's been so many really useful tips and tricks, and I wish we could kind of gather them together and maybe send them to the lists or something if people are on the email. Like someone mentioned an app to do with being able to track your taxi, I think it's Sandra. Plane tracker.
There's heaps of them.
We got them in New Zealand.
Yeah, and there's some of these travel tips and ideas. So maybe, I don't know, if we pull them together somehow.
We could put it part of the life hacks.
Yeah, that'd be great because there might be someone who's really interested in travel, wants to do it and now can find a way through. So thanks everyone for being part of this workshop. It's been so successful because of the sharing that's gone on. Thank you for the hacks. Just nothing to do with travel because we did hear that people sometimes need to save up a bit more to pay for the things that make travel, a bit of an easier experience. In the same way, BCA sometimes has to make things a bit easier, and we do that because people become BCA backers. So while you're saving for your travel, maybe put, $10 aside for travel, $1 for BCA. Right. We were told we had to do this. So there are people such as Tony and Sam and probably others who are very happy to sign you up as part of the program. We wish that we could give you travel points for becoming a backer, but at the moment, we'll work on it. But thank you for attending the workshop.
And before you all move, it's Angela here from BCA, and I've just got a quick little announcement. So we are about to break for lunch, but the hotel staff will first. So if we can all stay in your seats, because first the hotel staff will remove the barrier from the rooms, because the next session is a full room session. So if that can happen first, before there's too much movement, that would be great. And then we'll have the volunteers and staff handing out the lunch bags after that. Thank you.